Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods.
Vern, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Sunshine 106.8. A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, as always, we have a jam-packed show for you this week. We'll be kicking off with the papers, but before that, we're going to tell you about the NFL. We'll be catching up with Stephen O'Brien from the UKPackers.co.uk to recap on last week's news and to look ahead at all of the fixtures for this week and, of course, get his ACCA for Week 11. In racing, Dave Weldon of the Racing Hour podcast will preview all of the racing from this weekend and give us his lucky 15 and his impressive run of picking winners and at good prices as well that we've had in the recent weeks from Dave. So looking forward to that. Ken, he's still over in Milton Keynes and he'll be discussing the Northern Ireland Open where we were seeing 147s and serious snooker being played right across the board. And that's currently taking place in the Marshall Arena. So Ken will give us all the latest from over there as well. Huge weekend in rugby this weekend. Will Slattery be joining me, of course, from the Independent and the Left Wing podcast to preview this afternoon's clash with Twickenham. Andy Farrell has made some changes to the team and he's looking at youth and the future as well. So it's going to be a cracking match against England today in the Autumn Nations League Cup. So we'll preview all of that. In GAA, we'll be talking to Declan Drake as we get his reaction from Dublin's win against Laois in last weekend's semi-final of the Leinster Senior Football Championship, and we'll also be looking ahead to the massive clash between lifelong rivals Dublin and Meath in today's Leinster Senior Football Championship. And of course, it is the 100th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, so we will be talking to him about that as well. Premier League football is back this week as well, of course, and there was some international stuff that we have to talk about from during the week. So Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call will be talking to us about that Bulgarian match and the disappointment of not getting the win there, and we'll also preview some of the Premier League matches from this weekend. So, as always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And a new feature, you can now get in touch with us on WhatsApp as well on 087 188 1068, which is another way that you can get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. So, it's time to look at the papers now, and I'm joined in studio by Blaine O'Hara. Good morning, Blaine. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Very well, thanks. It's been a great week. It's been a busy week, but, you know, plenty going on and plenty of sport to catch up on and look at as well all week long. I have to say, I enjoyed last weekend. The Masters, of course, was on. There was plenty of stuff on, but the Masters was on, and it was good viewing. It was different viewing, I have to be honest with you. I didn't enjoy it as much as I did other years. I think the lack of crowd made a big difference, there's no doubt about it, but Johnson was unbelievable. You have to give him huge credit for his performance. He tore it up, and I don't know. I have my own feelings that maybe Augusta is not quite the same place that this time of year, in the sense that it seemed to play a little bit easier for some of the players compared to what we see when it's in the sort of spring, summertime, when the ground is that much harder. But it was still a good Masters nonetheless.
And Reg, what would you think then? Would you think they'd be playing it somewhere else? Where would you?
No,
think
no, they'll always play it there.
Always play in Augusta.
It's the time of year. It's just because of COVID. It's never at that time of year.
Okay,
it was pushed back, so it just means that ground is softer. They have rain that they wouldn't normally have. It was more, you know, the balls were sticking on the greens. That'd be better. Now it dried out over the course of the weekend, but the greens are that much softer, so the balls that are landing in, the famous thing about Augusta and the Masters is that the greens can be almost on a 45 degree slope at some stages and try to stop the ball on them. It's like trying to stop it on a snooker table that's on its side, so that's what the golfers always say about it. But I think this time it just seemed to play a little bit differently, but also the lack of the crowds, the lack of that atmosphere which creates and makes the Masters what it is, just wasn't there. And that was a bit disappointing. But look, it was great that they got it played at all, yeah, considering everything that's gone on this year. And it was enjoyable. It was still great to watch good golf on the television.
Absolutely, and being entertained, that's the one.
Yeah, so there's been a lot happening during the week as well. Unfortunately, both on and off the pitch, things are a little bit messy for Stephen Kenny. We're going to talk to Alan Cawley about that a little later on as well. But yeah, they seem to be trying to have a go at him now from every side, not just the football. Bit of a storm in a teacup, if you ask me, about some footage that he was showing during the week to try and motivate the players for the game. And, you know, I don't know. Look, you know, we'll talk to Alan about it. But, you know, I think that the real issue here is just the fact that they can't buy a goal and they can't buy a win. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And it's putting pressure on Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, was it 7 games now?
Yeah.
Every single one of his games he hasn't had someone score a goal yet for him.
Yeah, I know. It's a long record and it's not a nice record, but you have to put into context the fact that he's had so many players coming down from injury to COVID to, you know, selection issues, and it hasn't been easy for him. And I know, look, it sounds like everybody's constantly making excuses for him, but like, you try going out and playing international football with half a squad, it's not going to be easy. So I just hope, you know, this latest kind of distraction is in some way that they're going to try and find a way not to give him the opportunity. At this stage, we've got to be realistic and think about the players that we have as well.
Absolutely, and you have to look at it as well. Like, a lot of people are criticising Stephen Kenny, but the thing about it is he's not the one who's scoring the goals. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I know he's trying to motivate the players and all that, but as you said,
yeah,
there's so many different things, like with injuries, with COVID, with like learning your new squad as well. Do you know, like, it's very difficult to come into a, you know, a managerial role and to know what your perfect, you know, tactics are.
Yeah, it's just so difficult. I mean, Irish football is going through such a transition at the moment. It's gone through the mire in the last while with all of the allegations and stuff that's come out about the organisation itself. And they're trying their best to try and turn that all around. And it's very hard when you're not getting results. If we were winning matches, people would be happy and it would put a totally different slant on it. So, look, I'll talk to Alan Cawley a little bit about that later on. Also, of course, we'll be talking about the Premier League, which is back this week. And lots of people will be very, very happy, including myself, to see that. There's some cracking matches lined up for that this weekend.
Yeah, and I'm delighted as well. Like, Arsenal are actually playing Leeds.
Yeah,
they are, and I'm so excited to see how that one pans out. It's been a long, long time since Arsenal have played Leeds. I know we've played them in the FA Cup and all that the last few years, but to see them play in the Premier League, oh my goodness, it's going to be a cracking game.
Absolutely, it really is going to be a great one to watch. And of course, there's some other really good matchups as well, none more so than the Tottenham City game, which is on, of course, at 5:30. Spurs are at home to that one against City, but I don't know. Yeah. I have a feeling City are going to turn them over in this one.
Do you think? Even though Tottenham have been on great form as well, and Mourinho has really, you know, clicked into gear with Tottenham in recent form.
Absolutely, they're going great, but for some reason, I just think City, you know, they haven't been quite the force that I've been expecting them to be.
Yeah.
And I just feel they're going to get up for this one. I don't know what it is. I just have this feeling that City are going to turn them over. We'll see. Alan will maybe enlighten me a little bit more on that. But yeah, I know Spurs are going very well, but I just don't know. I think there's a lot to come from that City side that we haven't seen yet.
And then you have to look over then at the game tomorrow. Then it's the Liverpool versus Leicester game. And what a massive clash! But then you have to look at then what Jurgen Klopp is dealing with and the amount of injuries that he has, especially even in this international break as well, losing an awful lot of his star players. And he actually has said that he believes that a lot of his youngsters are going to smell this opportunity and take advantage of it and try and, you know, step foot into the first team. I think it's going to be a difficult game.
It's going to be very hard.
Liverpool.
No Van Dijk, Gomez, Trent Alexander, Henderson, Salah, all... Yeah. Question, but what, I suppose what Klopp is saying is that here's the chance now for the young guns to step up and show what they can do and put themselves on the radar for him. So we'll see if they're able to do that. Good old Jose, he's causing hassle again, calling out Gareth Southgate to name the players that the pressure is being put on for international duty. He loves causing an old storm,
Absolutely.
Doesn't he?
But listen, I think we have to bring up the question here is... The question of a winter break, this is coming into, you know, like we're in November now and the injuries are settling in on so many different teams. Like they have been playing since, you know, we came back from May with the whole COVID break.
Yeah.
And it's been non-stop for each player. And it's been like they've been playing week after week after week. So you have to bring up the idea that a lot of people have been asking about whether, you know, the Premier League should be bringing in a winter break to give these players a rest. Because you're going to look at this, Reggie, if they don't have a winter break and the Euros go on next year, they're going to be playing for a continuous full year without a break.
Yeah, I know. And yeah. It is a major issue for... Yeah. Players, but unfortunately, Blaine, as in all things, money talks, and the fixture season is so clogged up at the moment because of the backlogs, because of international football, because of everything else. Look, it's hard to say it, but the players are just a commodity to these big commercial organisations, and they just want them out on the pitch, and their attitude is tough, get on with it, you're getting paid enough. And maybe some of the fans feel that way too, but we'll see. Rugby, we're going to be talking to Will Slattery, of course, just after 10 o'clock about that, but there's a huge game on this weekend, of course, in the Autumn Nation Cup, as Ireland are playing England, and Ross Byrne is getting a chance to stake a claim for the future ownership of that Ireland number 10 jersey. There was a lot of speculation during the week about who would Andy Farrell go with and who would get picked in that 10 slot in the absence of Johnny Sexton and his injury. Would he look to, you know, go outside of Ross Byrne? But in the end, he's stuck with him. And a great opportunity for him. And I think it's right. I think Ross Byrne has been the one who has been in the shadow of Johnny Sexton for quite some time now, and you know, patiently waiting for his opportunity. And when he's come on, he hasn't been found wanting. So I still think it's a big ask for this Irish team to go to England and get a result, but we'll see. It's a strong enough side. I think it's as strong as he could have gone for, considering, against such a quality English side.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk to Will Slattery about that after 10 o'clock. Eddie Jones, of course, being Eddie Jones, playing his mind games as well and trying to throw a few spanners in there and cause a little bit of disruption, calling the Irish team the United Nations. And I mean, people who listen to Eddie Jones should really get a bit of sense. He's really just stirring the pot. That's what it's all about, and that's what he does. So Will Slattery would be talking to me about that. And of course, it's 100 years since the GAA Bloody Sunday events. November 21st, 1920. So Declan Drake is going to be on with us as well, talking about that. And, you know, a lot of events organised around the country to commemorate that 100 years.
Absolutely, yeah. So the Gaz, they're staged a special remembrance ceremony today to honour the 14 victims killed at the Croke Park by Crown forces on Bloody Sunday a century ago on November the 21st, 1920. So 14 flames will actually be lit on Hill 16 with a corresponding pillar of light dedicated to each of those who died, which I think is a lovely, lovely symbol.
Absolutely. And of course, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and President Michael D. Higgins, they'll be at the event. It'll take place at 6:05 on Saturday in advance of the Leinster football final between Dublin and Meath. And once that's over, of course, we'll be talking about that Dublin and Meath clash, one of the oldest rivalries in football. So we'll be looking forward to talking to Declan Drake about that a little bit later on. Finish off with golf in the headlines there, Blaine.
Absolutely. And Shane Lowry and Graham McDowell have both been doing well, so they're both 10 shots off the lead going into day 3 of the RSM Classics in Georgia, USA. So both Irish golfers are 4 under par, and a flawless second round 63 sees American Robert Streb hold a 2 shot lead on 14 under par.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Well, that's your headlines. Just to keep you up to date as well, there is a Tri Nations game going on at the moment, a cracking match between Australia and Argentina. Argentina coming hot on the heels of that wonderful win against New Zealand last week, are holding the Aussies to a draw at the moment in 26 minutes in a really, really physical encounter. That one is going on live at the moment as we speak. You can text us on 087 11 55 777. And now you can WhatsApp us as well on 087 188 1068. And glad to see people are starting to use that message coming in to remind me, and I meant to mention at the top of the show, as well as the Masters weekend, last weekend, of course, we did have the wonderful Katie Taylor getting another victory. Brilliant fight. I watched it live as it happened, and My God, she's unbelievable. Absolutely relentless. Now, I mean, she dominated the fight. There was no question about it. But her opponent was absolutely incredible as well. Stood there the whole time getting pummeled. I feared for her for many times during it. But once again, we're saying congratulations to Katie and her wonderful achievement. And she really is one of the greatest of all time in terms of Irish sports stars. Time to turn my attention now to NFL. And delighted to be joined, as always, by Stephen O'Brien. Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Reggie, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well. Enjoyed the football last weekend, got to see plenty of clips of various different bits of it, but I have to say there was one bit that stood out and there's probably stand out for the next 20 years as one of the most incredible catches and incredible moments in the NFL. It happened, of course, with the Cardinals and the Bills. Last play of the game. Let's have a listen to this.
Shotgun. Murray out of the pocket. 7 seconds. 6 seconds. Murray heaves it downfield. Murray magic
and Hopkins magic as well, it has to be said. For those of our listeners who didn't possibly see it yet, look it up on YouTube. But Hopkins surrounded by three players. It must have been a 50-yard throw at least. And he's surrounded on all angles and somehow manages to pop up in the middle of the three of them, catch that ball, touchdown as the clock hits zero. Unbelievable.
Yeah, just one of those. That's why you watch the NFL, and this is why they have a dedicated channel on game day, Red, you know, Red Zone. So it just has all of these plays. But again, just that'll go down on the annals of history. Just people will look at that game. It's even more painful for Texans fans because DeAndre Hopkins was a Texans wide receiver and got traded away by Bill O'Brien, who himself got turfed out this season. But yeah, just incredible. It's funny, though. One of the time we do it, and again, here's me bringing the Packers into for no reason whatsoever, but Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, I mean, he's done it now. A bunch of times, like really highlight real stuff. And he was sort of going into the analytics of why it's so difficult for defenders. Because as you said, there was three defenders on him at that stage. And if you watch even the slowdown version, you can see some of the lads trying to slap at the ball. But when you, for a Hail Mary, you have to ping the ball as high as you can, the biggest arc you can give it, so that it comes down on a dime. And so it's very hard for defenders to slap out of the way because of the angle that it comes in. You know, if a pass is more flat, it's easier to just get your hand in the way. Yeah. But DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, after that play, Madden brings out a new rating and puts him at 99. So he joins, it's apparently this thing that they're all obsessed about, you know, this 99 club thing, you get this chain and all this kind of thing.
Right.
And so one play elevated him in a video game to be even better. But look, he's an incredible player anyway. And Kyler Murray as well, that's what I find crazy about it as well. Everyone's talking about DeAndre Hopkins, but for Kyler Murray to make that play at the end of the game, to put the arc that he needed to put it where he needed to put it, just unbelievable stuff. That's why we love the NFL.
Absolutely. You're still playing Madden, are you?
Me, no. Is anybody?
You definitely are. There's no doubt about it.
Well, maybe. But I tell you what, there's mayhem online about Madden. People are giving out mad because apparently they've zoomed in on some of the stuff on the new Madden game. Yeah. And you can still see like the old Madden like of the year before. There's little decals on it, so really they're just slapping a new year on it, bringing it out at this stage.
Well, that sounds very like the Tiger Woods golf, it just keeps changing.
Yeah, the
number is the only thing that changes on the front of the box. Okay, listen, the quarterback, Saints, Drew Brees, the Saints quarterback, out for a couple of weeks. They might have to go with, who is it, Taysom Hill?
Taysom Hill, yeah. That's the shocking part about this, Red, really. Like, I mean, you look at Drew Brees, he's the superstar, as always has been, but the Saints seemingly haven't really addressed the quarterback position for a while now. And when the quarterbacks get to his age, you can see what's happening to him, right? I mean, how many times have we seen him injured now over the past couple of seasons? So he's got a couple of broken ribs and problems there, so he's going to be out for at least 2 weeks. So the Saints brought in Jameis Winston, who got turfed out with the Bucs because they brought in Tom Brady, you know, talk about upgrading. And they got rid of Jameis Winston, but he was known for kind of, you know, he could make some really questionable speeches, right? But apart from that, really questionable play where he could have one game where he's absolutely on fire. Fantasy players loved him because he put up massive yardage, but also massive interceptions as well. So they brought him in on the offseason. But they have this guy called Taysom Hill. Now, again, bringing the Packers in for absolutely no reason. I'm familiar with Taysom Hill because the Packers had him for, you know, a couple of months. And they apparently he's the one that got away. But he's this really interesting guy because the Saints paid him a whopper amount of money, $21 million over 2 years, Reg. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy who's not really playing. And when they paid him that type of money, they're saying, are they bringing him in after Drew Brees? Is he the future? What is he doing? But they've used him as this kind of gadget player. So So sometimes they'll have Drew Brees out there and Taysom Hill, who is a quarterback. They'll have him out there at the same time. They'll snap the ball directly to Taysom Hill, and he's kind of like this running back slash quarterback slash wide receiver hybrid. But they paid him this massive amount of money. Now, it was expected that they'd go James Winston with Drew Brees being out, but they've decided to go for Taysom Hill. He's not really a starter. He's never really started in the NFL. This is his first start. He hasn't thrown that much in the NFL either, although he did in college. So it's going to be interesting to see, Reg, what they're doing with this guy. I mean, you know, are they looking to maybe have him as the successor to Drew Brees? But you're talking about changing your entire offense to this guy, because Drew Brees, like, he's broken all NFL records for pass, and he sits back there. He's kind of a smaller guy, crazy accurate. Whereas if you have Taysom Hill in there, you're going to expect him to be running around the place like crazy. Mm-hmm. But they have Alvin Kamara, who's a great running back. So I'd expect on the day it's going to be an awful lot of read option stuff, which is him getting the ball back, scrambling around the place, running when he can, or if not handing it off, if not making that pass. It could be a disaster because he could get picked off a lot. But if not, they'll have some weird hybrid thing. They tried this with Tim Tebow-ish when he went to New England that time, this sort of wildcat offense. But again, against the grain, you'd expect them to throw Winston in there for a couple of weeks, especially since the Saints have a great record so far this season and they're Super Bowl favourites. So again, this could be a risky move, but it could pay off big time though either.
Absolutely. Okay. What's this about an incredible comeback from Alex Smith? Fill me in this. He almost died from an injury and he's never expected to play again.
Yeah, so this is a guy, he was selected over Aaron Rodgers in the draft, a good player, went to San Fran, and he played out his welcome because he's very vanilla, you know, like he'd get the job done for you, but it wasn't nothing too snazzy. So then he ended up going to Kansas City, had his best year, and then got replaced by an unknown player called Patty Mahomes. And then he goes to Washington, but he got this catastrophic injury. Like, this is, you know, and I'm sorry for people eating the breakfast, but this is bone poking through the skin stuff. It was a compound spiral fracture, Reg. So it goes from your ankle and spirals up your tibia. So, like, he broke, like, compound two legs. But, like, everyone sort of saw the injury on TV and thought, oh, that's terrible. But then they released a documentary to go into just how bad it was. So he got sepsis after that happened. His leg turned black, and he got necrotizing fasciitis. Now, if anyone watched Scrubs back in the day, that's a flesh-eating bacteria. So he nearly died. You know, the doctors were saying, look, we don't care about his leg anymore. We just need to keep this guy alive. Mm. So they did that. And then they literally, it's like scaffolding they put on his leg. And his leg was broken really severely, where to the point where they were like, this guy, like, they thought they were going to amputate his leg at one point. So they fixed that. So 2 years later, he's back on the Washington team. They're paying him a big bunch of money. They have this guy called Dwayne Haskins in there, who was a first round draft pick about 19 months ago. So he's not doing the business. He gets benched and they bring in Kyle Allen. So, like, Alex Smith, Reds, like, here's the guy who had to, they were going to put him on IR before the season, but he was begging the coaches, no, leave me on the active roster, because if they put him on IR, he'd never play again. So all of a sudden, Kyle Allen goes down with an ankle injury. They throw in Alex Smith, and he has his first back-to-back 300-yard game this season after all of the stuff that went on, the guy nearly dying. And Ron Rivera, the coaches, after coming out now and saying, look, he might be our long-term answer. So at 36 years of age, nearly dying from that injury because it was so bad, and now he could be the long-term starter here. Now, he's 36, so you have to look at it and go, how long does he want to play for? How long can he play for? But again, he's playing great. So really, the rest of the season for him, if he keeps on performing well, you know, it could be a massive comeback and redemption story. And it's really heartwarming stuff.
Excellent stuff. Okay, we're well into the season now at this stage. So who's emerging as the Super Bowl favourites at this stage?
You know what? It's a really tight race at the top. So you can't look past the Steelers because they're undefeated so far. So in the AFC, they're 9-0. They have the Chiefs nipping at their heels. They're 8-1. The Chiefs are the bookies' favourite to be Super Bowl champs. But again, the Steelers as well, they haven't lost a game all season. They're coming up against the Jags this week. So, you know, they look like they're going to march on. The Bills as well are doing fantastic. But the thing about the Chiefs and the Bills and everything else, and the Chiefs is kind of highlighted this week, Reds. They're coming up against the Raiders. They're 8-1, and their one loss is against the Raiders. And the Raiders, weirdly, are having kind of a nice enough season, but it's so tightly bunched at the top, and all of these teams have been knocked off by someone kind of surprisingly. The Bills were doing really well. They went on a skid, and it looks like they're back. And then on the opposite side, I'm happy to say that the Packers are leading it in the NFC. But again, like I was saying about the Saints' dodgy decision with Taysom Hill, they're second in the NFC, first in the NFC South, so they're number two. The Seahawks, again, another team, Reds, they look like they're on a skid, and then they come back on Thursday Night Football and beat the Cardinals. So they're 7-3, first in the NFC West. So it's very hard to call at this stage, which is why every game that happens for the next couple of weeks, you know, they're all going to start leapfrogging each other. So no one has it locked up. The Steelers look like they're running away with it. But again, there's some games they've had, Reg, and it's really close stuff. So it looks pretty dodgy. So it's too early to call. I think we'll have this conversation maybe in another 3 to 4 weeks just to see how it's washing out. Because if teams like the Vikings, who in the NFC North are third, but they're starting to make this resurgence. And the Patriots are starting to win games now as well. So it's a really interesting season, especially with COVID and everything else and players dropping off and everything. But yeah, it's all to watch for.
Okay, let's have a look at your racket for this week. So what are you going to go with?
Right, I've got a nearly 5-1 odds on this one. So I'll put down a fiver, you get 30 quid back. I'm going for that resurgent Vikings to beat the Dallas Cowboys, who are an absolute tragedy this season. Miami Dolphins, Tua, still doing the business. Him to beat the Denver Broncos. I went for the Philadelphia Eagles last week, and just awful stuff. So I'm going for the Cleveland Browns, which I'm always reluctant to do, to beat the Philadelphia Eagles this week. And then hopefully the Patriots, then they're starting to look a bit better. So them to beat the Houston Texans, who look like they've given up on the season. So that's nearly a 5-1 odds on that one this week, Reg.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, we've hit the crossbar a few times in the last couple of weeks, so there'll be no harm for us to come back out on top again and get some results in. Stephen, as always, fantastic talking to you. We'd be delighted to catch up with you again next week, and you take care of yourself.
You too. Thanks, Reg.
Thanks a lot. That's Stephen O'Brien there of the ukpackers.co.uk, giving us all of his NFL notes. Coming in as well, and of course his ACA too. So the his ACA is the Minnesota Vikings to beat the Dallas Cowboys, Miami Dolphins to beat the Denver Broncos, Cleveland Browns versus the Philadelphia Eagles, and the New England Patriots versus the Houston Texans. We do want to hear from you, of course, as always on the show, 087 11 55 777. You can WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Few angry people out there this morning, not really sure what we've done to get the blood boiling. Your show is a disgrace, lads, banging on endlessly about foreign soccer leagues, not one mention about today's two huge hurling matches. I'm finished with your show, Tony and Shankill. Well, Tony and Shankill, we're very sorry to lose you, I have to say, but we always cover GAA in the second half of the show. We did preview that if you were listening carefully, and if you'd like to listen to the whole show, you might find out that we do talk probably as much about GAA, if not anything else, on this sport. Foreign soccer leagues, a lot of people in this country like them. A lot of people want to hear about them. A lot of people want to discuss them. And that's proven by our text messages. And not a mention, another text message is coming in here. Not a mention about the League of Ireland. You mentioned every other sport. Yes, we did, yeah, because we never cover League of Ireland on this show. If you weren't a one-time listener, you certainly would realise that Alan Cawley, every week, has a slot on this show where we cover in huge detail, probably more than anyone else, the League of Ireland. So I'm not buying that one. But you keep those text messages coming in, folks. We do want to hear from you. And it's very important that you offer us your opinion as well. And please continue to listen. But if you don't want to, we're sorry to lose you. Time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined by Dave Weldon, of the Racing Hour podcast. Morning, Dave. How are you?
Not too bad, right? How's things?
Yeah, not so bad. Not so bad at all. It's been an interesting week. Plenty going on and lots of good sport. But of course, the horse racing last weekend, we were close and thereabouts again. We're getting closer.
Yeah, we two winners and a non-runner. So yeah. It was a nice day. You'd like to think the non-runner would have won as well. So that would.
Yeah, out of nowhere that non-runner came as well. So it was a bit disappointing when that was in the lucky 15. But yeah, it was still two winners. We take that every time. But there's plenty going on this weekend as well, of course. Haydock and Ascot, the big ones.
Yeah, big grade one action over in Haydock. The Betfair Chase, another stepping stone towards the Gold Cup. And a big race himself, obviously won in the past by the likes of Christopher Mai, who reposed today. Colin Starr won it for Long Run, Imperial Commander. So it's a really good race, deep in history. And it's small but select field today. The first one put in luxury game comes in that race. It's lost in translation for Colin Tizard, who won the race last year. He's got a 6-4 shot this time around. He faces two rivals, really. There's two other horses in the race. They're massive prices and really have no chance. Calanda's Oboe, who's a dual winner to King George, and Bristol DeMai, who is a kind of a Haydock specialist. But he's getting on in years now. He's a 9-year-old and he's been around a long time. So I think Lost in Translation is the young up-and-comer, and he can build on his win in this race last year. And to 3 o'clock at Haydock, he can go in there the first of the 15 at 6-4.
Excellent stuff. Okay, 6-4. Yeah. That's a loss in translation. Yeah, we've been following that one for a while, actually. So
he's a good horse. He ran a blinder in the Gold Cup last year. You commented his horses weren't really right at Cheltenham, and he still went on to finish third and looked most likely winner. So hopefully he can build on that this time around. Okay. And the next one to go in the book 15 then is Dashiell Drasher in the 115 at Haydock. He's around a 7-2 chance for Jeremy Scott and Matt Griffiths. Of course, and distance winner at Haydock, which is very important because defences do take a bit of jumping. I don't know if you remember, Reg, I put up a horse back in February called Master Tommy Tucker.
Yes.
And I said on the show that you basically win or you fall. And of course, that day he fell.
Yeah.
So he's jumping. He won the last day, but his jumping just isn't great. And I would be reluctant to take him such short odds. So I think a 7-2 Dashiell Drasher makes the most appeal there, okay, given his form around the track. And he was second last year to Champ in a novice race. And Champ went on to win the RSA. And he was a very good run there that day. And I think he's just probably the up-and-coming horse in that race.
Okay.
7-2 Dashiell Drasher in the 115.
Excellent.
And then in the 150 at Haydock, Shake 'Em Up Harry, owned, of course, by Harry Redknapp. It's about a 9-2, 5-1 shot at the moment. Good novice from last year, which you need in this race, the very competitive handicap. He was behind Shishkin at Newbury last year by 11 lengths. Shishkin went on to win the Supreme Novice and was probably the best 2-mile novice last year. So that's good form. He's off 130 here, which should underestimate him a little bit. He should have a bit in hand. And the yard are going well, the Ben Pauling yard. They've had about 4 winners in the last fortnight. So for a small yard, that's good numbers. And he's around a 5-1 shot. I think he'll take a bit of beating in the 150 at Haydock.
Excellent stuff. Okay, yeah, Harry Redknapp. He's got to listen to his podcast during the week on Peter Crouch. It's brilliant to listen to him. He's such a character. I think he is.
He's
owned 10 good horses, he said he has at the moment. So
yeah, I think he had a couple of horses with Sir Alex Ferguson and stuff like that as well,
yeah,
in the past. So he loves the game. Like, there's Stem City Bet Victor ad that he puts me on with this. I give you a tip and burnt across on and all that kind of
stuff. Very good.
Okay. The final one then, look 15, is in the 205 at Ascot. It's a Paul Nicholls horse called Real Steel. His first run for Paul Nicholls, he was at Willie Mullins. And to go back to his form, I can't believe this lad's not favourite. He's around 2-1 shot at the moment. He was 6th in the Gold Cup last year, and if you stop the race 3 out, he would be most likely winner in that race. Baiting on there, that's fine. He's back to 2.5 miles this time around. He won twice over this trip last year. Once beating Footpad, who was higher rated, and he beat Secret Investor at Down Royal in November last year. So he acts this time of year, going right-handed is perfect for him. He was third behind Min then in John Durkin at Punchestown last year, which is by far the best piece of form in this race. And I think 2-1, he should win easy if he's fit and ready to go, which, going with what Paul Nicholls said in his column yesterday, he is more than ready to. So Real Steel in 205 at Ascot.
Excellent stuff. Okay, a little bit of late racing going on at home as well in Naas. Anything good to pick out from there?
Yeah, there's two really good races today at Naas. There's the 12:30 and the 102. And there's three good horses in both of them. So I was teaming and hawing because I liked one or two of the horses, but I just couldn't differentiate the two. So if you can't differentiate, don't have a bet.
Yeah.
In the 12:30, Garza Noor, Call Me Lyrene, and Indiana Jones are three really good young horses who are unexposed. Garza Norris is his first run in Ireland, that's coming from France for Willie Mullins. Paul Mularine is unbeaten in 2, and Indiana Jones is won last time out of Cork for Mouse Morris. They're three really good horses, and will probably take whichever wins that race, he should take fourth for the rest of the season. And then the 102, same to be applied. Factory Dairies, Cashback, and Notebook. Factory Dairies and Notebook both ran in the Arco last year. Factory Dairies finished second. Again, if whoever wins this race will be a champion chase contender and will be a grade one contender going forward in the year. So two really good races at Naas. Sunday's a bit more of a mixed bag at Navan. 12:10 is a decent race, novice grade two, Monkfield. Back of the Darts, the favourite, around 13-8 at the moment. The one I take a chance on is Champagne Gold. I've got 5-1 for Henry Bromhead. He won the last day beating a horse called Place de Vosges, who came out and won the next time. That looks like good form. And around 5-1, he could upset the odds.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Anything else from the world of racing from this week that I should know about?
There was a couple of controversies last week. There was a horse called the Shunter, won the big handicap hurdle at Cheltenham. The controversy is that he was banned from racing for being a non-trier 4 runs prior to Tipperary. And the lad who owns him, Emmett Mullins, brother to Willie, was has been caught in the past. after doing this type of thing. So we got a heavy fine of $6,000. But the horse then ran, came back and ran three times on its merits before running in a great wood. And there's a bit of pressure on Robbie Power because he came out and said he was wasting so bad to get the right down to right, because he was off a featherweight mark. So it was just a bit of, again, racing, not showing himself in a great light. And then there was, I don't know if you've seen it, Reg, on the Saturday, there was a bumper at Cheltenham in the last race of the day, and it was called a dead heat, but the photo looked like it was taken on a Nokia 3210.
Yeah.
Because it was so dark at 10 to 4 or 5 past 4 whenever the photo was taken, that it just, they couldn't, on the live cameras the picture was very clear that the horse on the inside won, but when they took the photo they couldn't differentiate because it was so dark.
Right.
And so they had to call it a dead heat, which suited the owners because it was great. It was a listed mare's race, so they both got black type for their breeding going forward, but for the punters obviously it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So a couple of instances again, the race and just kick himself in the foot when it needs to be better at that.
Yeah, okay, yeah, well it's interesting. I certainly would, especially, you know, in this day and age when there's so much money at stake from betting and everything else, you'd be amazed. Exactly.
If you had a bet in that race, you have dead heat rules apply, so you have half the odds for half your stake, so it doesn't really look well for racing. We were talking about on the Race Hour podcast during the week, and like a simple thing that you use in tennis and stuff like that, a bit of Hawkeye material on their nose or on their head, exactly, and a line across as they use in tennis and stuff like that. That's if it hits the line first.
Yeah,
there's no photo needed. It's automatically that's the winner, and it makes it a lot quicker because there was hundreds of thousands of pounds and euros bet on the result of that photo, even alone, like in the race, and that was all up in the air.
Yeah, incredible stuff. Okay, well, hopefully they'll improve that standard fairly soon. Dave, as always, fantastic chatting to you, and looking forward to having a look at how that Lucky 15 gets on today.
Thanks, Reg. All the best.
Take care. That's Dave Weldon of the Racing Hour podcast, of course, who gives us great stuff every week. Two winners last week. He's always able, very, very unusual that we don't get some winner out of the tips that Dave gives us. This week he's going slightly shorter prices on the Lucky 15, I think. So you might want to consider it even more. In the three races that are in Haydock, it's starting with the 115, Dashiell Drescher, 7-2 shot. Then the 150 Shake'em Up Harry Redknapp's horse at 5-1, and the 3 o'clock is Lost in Translation, a 6-4 shot. In Ascot, the 205 is Real Steel, that's a 2-1 shot. So that's the Lucky 15, and we'll get that up on our social media channels as well. Now we're going to change codes and move over to snooker, and we're joined, of course, by our own Ken from the UK. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Absolutely. All well here. Nothing strange or exciting to report. A bit disappointed with the football during the week, but you know, I suppose they're doing their best with the limited numbers that they have. But things are going well for you as well. The Northern Ireland snooker is throwing up some great matches, and the 147s as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 147s from Trump. We had two in one day, which was great. You know, and we got a fantastic semi-final lineup.
Yeah.
Today we got Ali Carter against Ronnie O'Sullivan, and Judd Trump against a little known sort of person, David Grace, who beat Yan Bingtao, a Chinese boy from top 16 last night. It was a big surprise, but what a wonderful occasion for David Grace, sort of a journeyman as a professional, in and out of the game, falling off the tour, back on the tour, and now with a run to the semi-final, playing the world number one, of course, Judd Trump. But great for him to get to the semi-final, you know.
Absolutely. You were a little bit unlucky earlier in the week yourself, 4-3.
Yeah, I was 4-3. I was 3-0 down to Corin Mills and came back to 3-0. And, of course, he made a century in the last. I didn't get a chance in the last. But other than that, I've been playing all right, you know. And, I mean, we're so lucky that we have these tournaments, Rez, to be honest. You know, we've got the UK Championship. It's a big one next week. The Scottish Open after that. And then the World Grand Prix right up till the 20th of December. So, you know, to have these tournaments going on is just is remarkable, really. So I don't know what's going to hold for the new year, because we're supposed to have three China tournaments, but they won't happen, obviously. Yeah. So I don't know how they're going to fill in the gaps. But they're doing a good job with snooker under the circumstances. And it's very taxing on them, because a lot of them, even though some of them are sponsored, but some of them they'll have to sponsor in the new year themselves. So, you know, testing times for the game of snooker at the moment, you know, but at least it's going out on TV. There's loads of people watching it on TV. That's one of the one of the only pluses, I suppose. Yeah,
yeah.
Because there's very little live sport on, but Yeah, it's one of the big pluses. The audiences are huge on TV.
Are you finding it a little bit, I won't say easier, but have you a bit more time to practice than you would have had maybe when you're at home and coming and going?
Yeah, of course. I mean, as professionals, you have a special dispensation to be able to practice in new clubs, because all the new clubs are closed and anyway to the general public. But you have a special dispensation to be able to go in and practice in the academies or in the clubs. Probably a lot of the players are still practicing probably more than ever, just out of boredom as well, because there's nothing else to do, you know. So it's a bit of a strange one. So I don't know myself. I get tired after a couple of hours.
You're worn out.
At my age, I just get able to practice 8 hours a day. Now after a couple, I have to sit down and have a rest.
There's not long to go. You'll be back soon. Let's look again at these two semi-finals. So Judd Trump has taken on David Grace, as you mentioned. Judd Trump's form is incredible at the moment. You'd have to fancy Trump there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it was set up lovely for a Trump O'Sullivan final. They played in the final the last couple of years, and it's been really, really close. I think only by the odd frame each time. But the other interesting one is Ronnie O'Sullivan playing Andy Carr. They haven't played since Shouldergate, because they shoulder barged each other at the World Championship a few years ago, as they were walking by each other at the table. Like, you don't often see that in snooker, but they had a little bit of a shoulder charge and a little bit of a spat. And so the interesting, this is the first time they've played now since that, so that's quite interesting. And of course we had Ronnie O'Sullivan who how shall I say, broke wind at the table during the week and turned around to the referee and says, "Was that you?"
I think he's
live
just,
on TV.
He's deliberately trying to create as much controversy as he can these days. He's gone mad.
Absolutely, absolutely. And did it purposely when the referee was directly behind him. And while he was at the table, but the funny thing was he turned around to the ref, and the referee walked up to the top of the table, got out of the downwind, as we say,
Ronnie, I don't know, he just seems to be there for the crack these days. And when he does turn up, like, he's so brilliant. There he is in the semi-finals again. He's so amazing. But you just don't know what to make of him at this stage.
No.
I mean, wasn't it the week before he was trying to have a go at Alan as well? So we were talking about him. But I suppose it keeps him in the picture the whole time, you know?
Everyone
loves talking about him.
He knows how to court the papers.
Controversy,
yeah, for sure. You know, it'll be interesting. Actually, he's never been nominated
for the
Personality of the Year. Yeah, in all the years he's been playing now, he's been a professional since 1992. He's never even been nominated.
I know, it's so wrong.
Yeah. And the awards are coming up now very soon. They're going to be in December, but the nominations are going to be coming out very soon. But in all his 28 years as a professional, he's never been nominated once.
Yeah, absolutely. So strange. Mm. Something.
Somebody doesn't like him. Somebody doesn't like him.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose during the weekend, no doubt you got to see the Irish game. It was disappointing. Very hard. We were probably lucky we didn't lose, the way, you know, Bulgaria had a number of chances that they could have stuck in, probably should have stuck in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just find it hard to score, aren't they? We've been blessed with sort of Robbie Keane and even Niall Quinn before him, you know, who was able to score goals. But we're missing a sort of goal scorer at the moment. But I like the way he's playing, to be honest. I do like Stephen Kenny. And I like the way his theory of how to play the game, just trying to get the ball in the net, though. That's the hard thing at the moment. But hopefully it will come good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I suppose it's not going to be easy when he doesn't have the players. That's always going to make it so much more difficult. Quick word on United. Is Premier League back this weekend?
The big game at West Brom. We'll see how they get on against West Brom after the little bit of a hiatus. And the big game, of course, Spurs-Man City. That'll be a cracking game.
I fancy City in that one. I was saying it to Blaine earlier.
I actually think Spurs could have a really good run this year. You know,
yeah, no, they're going great. Spurs are brilliant.
I think they could really test Liverpool and City this year.
Yeah, no, they are. They're going brilliant. It's just for some reason I have a feeling about today. I think City need that. They haven't really hit the levels that I was expecting to this season. And I think today's one could be the one, or the Spurs game could be the one that they kind of come back at.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, if Spurs win that, I mean, they put themselves right in amongst the mix, you know. So I think it's going to be one of those seasons you're going to have a lot of games, you know, it's not going to go to form, as you know, because there's no crowd, so there's less pressure on players as well. And we're finding that in snooker. You see some of the performances from players, particularly lower down, because there's no crowds there, there's less pressure on them, so they can just go and just play as if they're sort of playing in the club, as it were, you know, and playing some really good stuff.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Ken, great as always to chat to you. We'll catch up again next week. Mind yourself over there.
Cheers, Reg. Thanks a lot. Okay.
You too. That's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest from over in Milton Keynes in the Northern Irish Open, of course, where we see Trump taking on Grace and Carter taking on O'Sullivan, and it looks like it would probably, you'd fancy, be a Trump-O'Sullivan final, which would be a cracking match to look forward to, no question about it. Delighted now to turn our attention to rugby, and Will Slattery of the Left Wing Podcast and the Irish Independent, of course, joins us as usual for the Rugby Slot. Good morning, Will, how are you?
Hi, Reggie, good, thanks.
Great. Excited, I have to say. I'm looking forward to this game. Last week was good. Great performance from Ireland. Disappointing, obviously, to see injuries for key players. Johnny Sexton going off early. But good performance all around from Ireland against Wales. Wales, I have to say, were probably as poor as I have ever seen them. I was very disappointed with the way they turned out, but I was delighted the way Ireland worked. So what did you make of it yourself?
Yeah, like I said, Wales are probably at their lowest ebb since, I would say, maybe, you know, the end of the Graham Henry, start of the Steve Hansen era. You know, you'd think you probably would have played against those teams where Ireland, you know, put up some very big scores against them at Lanzarote Road. And similarly now, even though they were only in the World Cup semi-final or a short time ago, the morale seems to be very, very low. To be honest, I think Wayne Pivak's days are probably numbered there. But from an Irish perspective, yeah, it was mostly positive. You know, not converting some of those opportunities into tries sooner have been a disappointment. They obviously opted to pad the scoreline in the second half with a couple of kickable penalties where they could have gone to the corner, maybe got a try a bit earlier. But overall, yeah, it was positive. James Lowe was really good in his debut. Gibson Park added, you know, a really quick service. You know, Peter O'Mahony put in a really good display. He obviously got rewarded with a start against England today. So, yeah, it was positive. Look, you know, today is the big test. You know, France, disappointing. Wales was positive today. We really tell a lot, really, about where Ireland are at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It's mouthwatering, the clash today. I haven't looked forward to a game as much for quite some time. I think more so because we're going with a somewhat different side as well, and I want to see how these younger players perform on this type of stage against such quality opposition. Eddie Jones up to his usual tricks. I think anyone that falls for that kind of tactic from Jones now at this stage is very, very naive. I was even a little bit surprised that the Irish management felt it worried to give any sort of response to Jones's tactics.
Yeah, it's a funny one. He always likes to lob in a couple of grenades. Yeah. Obviously, he mentioned the United Nations remark about the amount of project players that are there. He's put, and more into that's obviously a kind of a catchy one, and everyone thought it was, you know, either funny or hated it. But the big one for me was his comments on Andrew Porter and the scrum, and, you know, putting pressure on Pascal Gauzère to look at Andrew Porter's scrummaging style, because Pascal Gauzère was the referee when Leinster played Saracens a couple of weeks ago, and the Leinster scrum was completely decimated. Porter and Healy were put under all sorts of pressure by the Saracens front row. And today, that's a really big area. You know, Quinn Roo has been picked to solidify the scrum. He was very good in that regard last week. He's a player that a lot of people, I suppose, have given a hard time in terms of his contribution around the pitch, but that is what he is good at. He's a very powerful man at the scrum. You know, an underrated part of scrummaging is the push coming from the second row, and I think there was an admission that Leinster probably, the back row as well, focused probably too much on stopping Billy Vutipola off the base of the scrum and maybe didn't engage as an eight unit enough. So I think Quinn Roo has been picked in that regard, and Jones is kind of putting a doubt in the referee's mind. So
not his first time, I might add. He's done that before and plenty of others. That's another old tactic of his. I think at this stage the referees are pretty wise to his, you know, this put the seed of doubt in and then make it a talking point before the game has even started.
Like it's a funny one. Like it still does have impacts in certain regards. Like I remember, it's been such a long COVID layoff, I'm trying to remember when this was. England played Wales, and he talked about Patchell in the build-up and how Patchell, this is a big test for Patchell. Is he good enough to play Test rugby? And Patchell had an absolute nightmare of a game. Yeah. That was maybe for 2019? It's kind of escaped me now. But 2018, sorry, I think it was. So sometimes his hand grenades do go off and actually cause a bit of damage. But as you say, yeah, he does it so regularly that does it have an effect on the referee? I guess it'll be interesting to see today because about Porter has really rebounded well, it must be said, from that setback. He was really, really good against Wales as well. And he was probably one of our best performers over the last couple of weeks. But this is another huge test today. Like that England front row, Vunipola, George, Singler, it's about as good a front row as there is in world rugby. Yeah. And then you have Itoje and Lansbury pushing him behind him. So it's a huge test.
Yeah, and for Kelleher as well. So young, 22, in there in that front row. It's a big deal. And the line-out time would be pressure as well. I suppose another man that's going to, although he doesn't seem to feel pressure, is James Ryan, captain of the side today. One that I always felt was going to be Irish captain at some stage, possibly not quite as soon as this, but I think he'd be well up to that task.
Yeah, he's captain teams all the way up from St. Michael's to the Ireland under-20s. He's, you know, he deputised, you know, with Ireland when Johnny Sexton went off recently. I think it's a natural progression for him. There was a lot of calls for him to be made the captain after the World Cup. Because obviously Johnny Sexton at his age most likely won't be around for the World Cup, although he has ambitions to play there. I'll be really interested to see how he handles the extra responsibility because he's been so good and so consistent with his performance level. It's not as simple as just, I know he's captain a lot of teams, but being the Ireland captain is a lot different. Like I know Brian O'Driscoll had a lot of success at a young age as a captain, but he's since said that he doesn't know if it benefited him as a player being the captain. He might have been a great captain and the team played well, but did it benefit him as a player to be the captain at such a young age? I think he said he doesn't know if it did. So I'll be interested to see the on-field decision making as well, how he kind of goes about that. Because Peter O'Mahony seemed to have a big hand in it against Wales anyway when Sexton was off the pitch. Hmm. There's a couple of added elements to being the captain that make it difficult. But I think he's well set. His performance level is so good. It's funny, today I feel like his performance level is more important than his captaincy. In terms of, like, Itoje has been so dominant against Ireland in the last couple of meetings that Ryan has to win that battle if Ireland are going to win. So that kind of puts a bit of pressure in the sense that he needs to nail his individual role so much, but he also needs to lead the team. It's his first time leading the team. That'll probably take up a lot of brain space. So it's a bit of a juggling act and a balancing act. He seems to be well capable of doing it. But it'll just be interesting to see how his individual battle plays out, as well as kind of picking up his interaction with the referees as well, because that's a big thing that people have maybe criticised Johnny Sexton about.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of elements to kind of keep an eye on today.
Yeah, but there's no doubt about it. In modern captaincy, it's very much about there's a team of captains, and you can see that. And around him, as you say, he's going to have the likes of Stander O'Mahony, to back him up and offer advice, Cian Healy in his ear, things like that. So the it's not maybe as pressurised as it may have been in the past. Now, look, a lot of talk leading up to this game as well about what Andy Farrell was going to do with that 10 position. You looked at Billy Burns last week having the unfortunate situation, having to come off pretty quickly after going on when Sexton got injured. So it led to a lot of questions about what way Andy Farrell might go with the 10. Who would he look towards? But he's gone with Ross Byrne, and I suppose Ross Byrne has been the number two for quite some time. It would seem like the logical decision to make, but what did you make of him putting Ross in there?
Yeah, I think Billy Burns probably would have got the nod had he not been forced off with into the HIA protocol, because I think he was unavailable for the beginning of the week, so Ross Byrne got that extra training time. But of the CVs, Ross Byrne's is the most compelling in terms of taking that step up. It's just unfortunate for him that his only other start, I think, came against England in that World Cup warm game, which was like a massacre, I think we'll always remember. And now here he is again. His next opportunity in a big game is the same opponent. I think he's in a tough spot, because I honestly think that he'll basically be judged off today's game, for better or for worse. If it's not a good day at the office and he doesn't play well, I really can't see him getting many more meaningful opportunities in big games as a starter for Ireland. As harsh as that sounds, well, I could be wrong, but that's just my read of it. Because I think that people, a lot of people already seem to have made up their mind in terms of his international credentials, which is quite unfair considering he hasn't really gotten that many opportunities. Andy Farrell said it himself, like, how do we know if these guys are good enough if we don't give them the chance? So this is his big chance. Like, because while there has been a lot of changes from the meeting in March or February, rather, I think there's only five starters still there. There's still a lot of quality in that team. So it's not as if he's being thrown in with a team of greenhorns. You know, it's a big day for him. I think he deserves the opportunity. I just hope it doesn't go in terms of a team performance like it did in that World Cup warm-up game, because it's very hard for him to rescue anything when the team, especially the forward pack, are being destroyed by England. So it's a huge day for him. It's the biggest game of his career. I know he's played some big games for Leinster, including the Pro 14 final, but this is the biggest game of his career. It could possibly decide whether he has a long-term future international level or if he'll just be someone who maybe comes in some of the games against Tier 2 nations.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. That's right. Will be one to watch, no doubt about it. The other big talking point, of course, is the back row. Last week, we said it here in the show, felt that Peter Manny was under some pressure to put in a big performance. He certainly did that, an outstanding game last week, and gets picked again this week, as does Stander. But neither of them maybe in their starting position, where Doris moves into eight, it causes some sorts of conundrums. Now, there are those who feel that Stander is better suited to six, but we should have an out-and-out seven there. And you wouldn't say that that's what Peter Mahoney is, but maybe that Andy Farrell has now looked at it, right, we want to have a much more physical back row, in the sense that he's put O'Mahony to open side. But do we lose the scavenger that we might need against England?
Yeah, that's definitely an argument. Like, you know, Will Connors is picked on the bench. I personally like the back row makeup. I think the guys there are quite versatile. Like, Doris can play 8-6, likewise Stander. O'Mahony has played a little bit at 7, I think, over the years, but not a huge amount, certainly not in a game of this magnitude. Mm-hmm. And even, like, the England back row is similarly flexible. You know, Curry and Underhill have both played 8-4 as well as 6 and 7. So, but I think across the board, a lot of these guys are... Like, a lot of them are. Like, O'Mahony is a poached threat. Stander is a poached threat, especially in the last couple of weeks. He's been really good in that regard. So we might lose slightly in that regard. But I think the physicality and, you know, the O'Mahony, the bit of dog in him, to, like, the last few meetings, I feel like we're getting a lot of kind of visual clips of, like, England players grabbing Ireland players and kind of being in their face. We want to kind of see that today from the Ireland players. Especially O'Mahony's very good at that, at getting in people's faces. You know, Stander was asked about Rosie Erasmus's comments during the week about Ireland being softer, and he wasn't happy with it, especially coming from, you know, a fellow countryman and his former coach at Munster.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think he'll be really, really hopeful to put that right today. And in terms of a good performer, I think this could be really a day where Caelan Doris announces himself on the international stage. I know people who've been watching, you know, Irish provincial rugby will know it, the talent he has. But this is about as big a stage as it gets. Going up against Billy Vunipola, he was pretty good against Saracens in the quarterfinal. He was one of the few players who actually made goal forward ball that day when a Saracen defence was extremely suffocating. I have a feeling today could be the day where he really stands up, maybe puts himself even in Lions contention and marks himself as a really coming eight in international rugby. Couldn't ask for a tougher task going against that England back row. But he's showed so much talent so far, and I think I like this back row. I think it can really cause some damage today.
Okay, that's brilliant. Well, give me a prediction, Will.
Oh, like, Ireland are 12-point underdogs. I think we'll cover that anyway. I think a narrow defeat, I think, will improve on the performances we put in the last couple of outings against England. I don't think we're going to win, unfortunately. England have picked a very strong team and have a good bench as well. But I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be a nice building block looking ahead to maybe playing them in the Aviva in the Six Nations of March and possibly taking a scalp there. But for the moment, I think it'll be an improved performance, hopefully.
I think that's a fair call. Okay, Will, as always, great chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks very much. That's Will Slattery there of the Irish Independent, of course, and of the Left Wing podcast that he does with Luke Fitzgerald, giving us his thoughts on the huge game today as Ireland take on England in the Autumn Nations Cup. Time to turn our attention to GAA now. Delighted to be joined in studio by the one and only Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Reg. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. Plenty of wonderful action going on this weekend. That's for sure. It's chock-a-block with GAA happening between the football and the hurling. So there's no doubt about it. We have a busy, busy schedule this weekend. But it was busy last week as well. But the Dubs managed to get the job done against Laois. Let's have a quick listen to what Desi Farrell had to say to you after the match.
I think we probably wouldn't be happy with what we were doing in the first quarter, turning over a lot of balls and just didn't come out of the traps the way we would have liked. So that's definitely something for us to look at. It's difficult to know, to be honest. We'll obviously have to look at the tape and see what was going on there, but definitely some needless turnovers. You know, I don't know whether it was over exuberance or a little bit of lethargy in terms of, you know, not really sort of putting the foot in the throttle at times there, you know. So anyway, we'll take a look at it, but it is a concern and something we definitely will be reviewing.
Yeah, interesting. Listen to his tone there, Declan. He seems to be a little bit, I'm not going to say downbeat, but he's certainly not kidding himself. There's still work to do in his mind.
Yeah, it was an honest answer to it, to an honest question, really.
Yeah.
And he was right in what he said. The first 15 minutes, or up until the first water break anyway, was poor from a Dublin point of view. But once the water break had come, and there was a few words I'm sure exchanged, at that particular time they upped the ante after that and then ran out comfortable enough winners. Nicely taken goals by young Sean Bugler, who continues to show his promise and develop on it. And Kieran Kilkenny's goal then in the second half, which was pure class, a soccer style finish low into the bottom corner of the hill goal to set the seal on the victory. And Kieran is having a fantastic year so far, as somebody in one of the papers this morning suggested, an early forerunner for footballer of the year. But look, mission accomplished. They're back in the Leinster final now this evening.
That's it. And of course, Meath, I grew up, and that's a long time ago, but watching these Dublin Meath clashes over the years, when it really was the rivalry to challenge all rivalries, it's maybe lost a little bit of its glamour in the last recent years, since Dublin have become that bit more dominant. But it still has that almost, you know, reminiscent feel about those great days that Dublin Meath took on against each other. Desi, again, a few words on the preview of that.
Meath, obviously, we didn't get to see any of it. They've been performing really well of late. We obviously played them in the league a couple of weeks ago in Parnell Park, and they'd probably feel hard done by that they didn't come away from that game with something. So they're in a good place and have racked up some really big scores. And in this game, scoring goals at the rate they're scoring, it's definitely warrants plenty of attention, that's for sure. So we'll be under no illusions as to what lies in wait for us next weekend.
Look,
at all we can do is take each game on its merits, and we have to prepare accordingly. And you never know when there's going to be a banana skin presented to you, you know. So we have to be diligent around getting ourselves right and just take every game that'll come.
Funny to use that word, banana skin, because it was the very thing that was in my head, just based on the fact that they do seem to be a bit of a goal scoring machine at the moment, that Meath team. And also, this is an unusual year. We're seeing teams' performances that are somewhat different to what we've seen in other years. And there's no question, this time last year, we've been talking about Dublin, Meath, and we would have said, look, you know, they'll put up a bit of a challenge for a while, but the Dubs will overcome them in the end, and blah, 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 blah. That's the kind of what we would have been saying. But this being the COVID year, I don't think we can quite say that. I still feel confident that Dublin will win, but it just feels a little bit tougher than it was last year.
Well, the first thing is, you're talking about the great rivalry which they had over the years, and they had, and it was quite intense, according to the 91 saga, I suppose, being the most prominent one of them all. But the common denominator between them all, Reg, was the fact that they were all in the old Croke Park.
Mm.
Haven't had too many classic encounters. Well, Meade might disagree. They had a classic encounter when they put, was it 5 goals past us one year, the last time we seriously lost to them. But all those old battles were in the old Croke Park. Yeah, it certainly is a year of change and all the rest of it. But I think one of the biggest factors in it is the fact that it's knockout football this year. You get one chance at it, you know?
Mm.
Cork got one chance against Kerry.
Yeah.
Jesus, by the God, did they take it? You know, Donegal got one chance against Tyrone. They took it.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight is Meade's big, big chance. Staying competitive in the game is going to be the biggest aspect of it from them. Yes, they have the goal scoring threat. I think it's 12 goals or something they've scored in the last two games. But that's been against Wicklow and against Kildare. They're going to need to score goals if they have any chance of winning tonight's game.
Absolutely. And of course, Desi always talks about relying on senior players as well. None more so than for a game like this.
The turnaround is the same for everybody, you know, so nobody's stealing a march, or nobody has that as an excuse. I think tonight for us it was about getting another championship performance under our belt, hoping that we can gel things a little more and sort of get that dynamic that's really important in terms of cohesiveness, see that emerge a little bit more for us, and we're happy to have two big games under our belt now and look forward to the next one.
Sees the cohesion coming through. And we spoke last week about team selection, and we were having a little bit of a debate, if you remember, ourselves, as to what was the best format for the team. Was it to have the senior experienced players in from the start, or carry on the way he was and bring them on? That's what he did last week. He named the same starting 15 as against Westmeath. There was no pre-match changes to the team. But by the end of the game, he had the likes of Philly McMahon, Cormac Costello in particular, who came on and scored 7 points last week, scored what Leash scored in an hour, in less than half an hour himself. And other players came on as well, Brian Howard. Now, these guys are seriously pushing for places in the starting team tonight. That's exactly the way he wants it. So it'll be interesting to see again what his team selection is tonight. There may very well be a change or two to the team that was named last week.
Yeah, will be interesting to see as well. Let's talk about Meath as well a little bit. Of course, I think it was around 2010 that goal spree that you were talking about was last for them. But there's no doubt we've seen improvements in Meath football over the last couple of years, and it needed it. When I know it needed it, but they'll come with confidence tonight.
On a good day, Reg, it would take me about 45 minutes to get home from Croke Park.
Yeah.
That afternoon, which was a very warm afternoon, it took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because I think I stopped in a couple of hostelries on the way just to get over the shock of it. And it was a shock that particular day. But that was the wake-up call that Dublin football needed at that time, and look at it since. Andy McEntee is a fine coach, a fine manager. He showed that. He won the All-Ireland club title with Ballyboden St. Denis. It was 4 years ago now. Robbie McDade was involved, I think, as well. And on the opposite side now, of course, Brian O'Regan is a coach with Dublin. So that'll be an interesting clash tonight. But they came back post the COVID break and have done really well. They lost narrowly to Dublin in the National League in Parnell Park, a game perhaps they felt they could have won. I think they drew at Monaghan the following week.
Mm.
And they've had two championship games since and done quite well. So they're building. Their task at the start of the year was to qualify for another Leinster final. They've achieved that. Now they have to go out and perform in it tonight. Yeah, they'll come all guns blazing in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game. But I think ultimately when push comes to shove, whoever is left on the Dublin bench and is brought on tonight can make the difference if required.
Okay.
But right, what I would say
is
it's great to see Meath coming back.
Mm.
Absolutely. Brilliant to see them coming back.
Mm.
I thought it might have been Kildare, but I think last week has set them back significantly. But if anyone is going to challenge Dublin in the province of Leinster in the next couple of years, it's going to be the Royals.
Absolutely. Okay, let's have a look at the other provincial finals then, of course, in Ulster. Cavanagh taking on Donegal. Donegal favourites to take that one, and of course has significance from the Dublin point of view as well.
It does, yes. Should we overcome Meath tonight, we will play the winners of tomorrow's Ulster final in a couple of weeks' time. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a repeat of last year's decider, and Donegal won that handily enough. But they've done really well this year. They've been to the forefront of most people's thoughts in terms of potential challengers to Dublin for the title this year.
Mm.
And so far they've backed up that fate. But Cavan have had a whirlwind of a championship, haven't they? I think they were 10 points down the last day, and they fought their way back. 70 minutes on the day, and anything can happen, but I would expect that Donegal would probably just be a little bit too strong for them.
Absolutely. The other provincial final, of course, is Cork against Tip. Not necessarily the two names that you come straight to mind in that setup, but again, Cork looking likely there.
At the start of the year, if you said Cork were going to play Tipperary in the Munster final, you would have said it would have been in Hurling and Thurles, you know.
Absolutely.
Or maybe down in the new park or whatever. But yeah, look, Cork have caused the shock of the championship so far, obviously in beating Kerry with that last gasp goal in Páirc Uí Chaoimh in the Munster semi-final. The thing about it now, Reg, is it's complete role reversal for the Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
They had no expectation going into the Kerry game, really, from anybody else. But now the weight of the world is on their shoulders because everyone expects them to go and beat Tipperary tomorrow afternoon. Hugely significant day for Tip, of course. We know the anniversary of Bloody Sunday today and Tipperary's involvement in that, and they're wearing their special commemorative jerseys and all that tomorrow afternoon. So that'll be a big factor and a big motivational factor for them.
Mm.
But Cork have come this far. They've done a lot of the hard work in beating Kerry, and I don't see them stopping tomorrow afternoon either. I expect them to be facing Mayo in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, indeed. And the year that everybody seems to think being so odd, Mayo might well still have a chance.
Now, Reg, come on.
I have to throw that in there. Trying to turn our attention now to the other code, of course, and the hurling. What a weekend we have in store for us, no question about it. Two huge matches coming up, and I suppose the big one is the we'll get to it in a minute, is the Tip Galway match, but of course the other one as well, Waterford and Clare. I find it hard to decide which way that one's going to go.
Yeah, it's some people are billing it as Waterford versus Tony Kelly, you know, because of his outstanding display against Laois last week, and he scored 145 in his three games this year.
It's incredible.
Without a shadow of a doubt, the hurler of the year, even at this stage, you know. Some of the scores he took last week in Ullamore Park were out of this world. I mean, they're unbelievable. And you need to even attempt them, never mind actually succeed in them. So Waterford are coming back off the loss of the Munster final to Limerick last week.
Yeah.
Can they lift themselves significantly for the occasion? Yeah, I think they can. A place in the All-Ireland semi-final, you don't need any more motivation than that. There'll be no more, I would say, than a puck of the ball between them at the end.
No, and there's serious talent in that team as well. I mean, I know it was heartbreaking for them last week, and there's talk of, you know, the turnaround being a bit quick for them, and there'll be tired legs and all that kind of stuff. But as you said, getting up for a game like this isn't a difficult thing to do.
No, and in other years, in more normal years, you would have had 3 or 4 weeks to mull it over, you know. And now they've had less than a week, which I think, from their point of view, is a good thing.
Mm. Tip, of course, going for the two in a row. But there's a lot of people that feel that Galway might be just a little bit too classy and tricky for them.
I can't believe, honestly, that Galway lost the Leinster final last week.
Yeah.
You know, they were on top in the game. They were in control of it. They got a couple of frees where they went for goals when it would have been easier to put the ball over and just keep the scoreboard ticking over, you know. Great performance again with the likes of Joe Canning there last week. And you have to give credit to Kilkenny. They celebrated that victory like it was an All-Ireland last week, because it meant so much to them.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of those fellas were winning their first Leinster title, which is great to see the enthusiasm for it. Galway in the same boat now as Waterford coming into this game, having lost that provincial final. Can they respond? They're playing a Tipperary team who have their mojo back. They got it back against Cork last week, a fine game down in Limerick, taking the same route, they hope, to the All-Ireland that they did last year. Bit more difficult this year, obviously, because Limerick are still involved in it on the other side of it. So this is going to be a fantastic contest in Limerick this afternoon. It has the potential to go the distance, and I think that Tipperary might just have a little too much for them.
Oh, do you think so? I don't know. I think, it's a real tough one for me, as you know. Galway mother, Tipperary father, the old classic that I grew up with, watching these two taking each other on and not being allowed to pick a side on it. But
I don't know. Going back to the days of Pat Fox and Nicky English.
Oh,
and,
don't talk
Jerry McInerney, the man with the long hair and the white boots. Yeah.
Even further back to the Connollys, far back as then. But there were great times. And that's going to be a cracking match, and I can't wait for it. I'm really, really looking forward to that one.
Back-to-back matches today as well. So there's your Saturday sorted, and you have the small matter at the Oval Ball somewhere in between.
A little thing at 3 o'clock to watch as well. So it's going to be a long day of sport, no question about it. The ladies are going to be facing Armagh in the semi-finals. That's on the 28th of November.
That's right, yes, we spoke last week. Armagh were playing Mayo in Parnell Park last Saturday afternoon, and the Ulster ladies came through in impressive fashion to deservedly set up that crack at the 4-in-a-row chasing Dubs next Saturday. The game was originally fixed for Semple Stadium in Thurles, but yesterday it was announced that it has been moved to Kingspan Breffni Park in Cavan. Makes more sense on a lot of points there. So next Saturday afternoon, 4:30, the quest for the 4-in-a-row continues. It's going to be a very tough ask against the fine Armagh team. So hopefully Mick Bowen and the injuries that he's had before the Waterford game can clear up, particularly the likes of Sinead Goldrick and Siobhan McGrath, who will be two key players moving forward for them.
Absolutely. And of course this weekend, loads in every paper, there's a full supplement actually in the Irish Independent for those of you that are interested on the centenary of Bloody Sunday, and huge events planned, and the Taoiseach and the President will both be in Croke Park a little bit later on this evening for that ceremony.
Yeah. There's actually one taking place at the moment at Parnell Park. I think it starts about 10:30. It's the official Dublin County Board commemoration of the day, where the Lord Mayor Hazel Shew will lay a wreath and unveil a plaque in Parnell Park to honour the 14 victims. And then, as you say, the memorial this evening, the lighting of the 14 lights and that in Hill 16, and the Taoiseach and the President in attendance. When you think, Reg, 100 years ago, at 8:30 in the morning, there was an eerie calm over Dublin. Everything was... people just getting on with their normal lives. Within a couple of hours, all changed utterly, as they say. And here we are now. And it's fantastic that Dublin and Tipperary are in their provincial finals this weekend. And I suppose a lot of people, well, Dubliners obviously hope Dublin win, but it'd be nice to see Tipperary in some respects beat Cork as well to mark the occasion. But let us not forget the 14 that went to a football match and never came home.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that will be well remembered this weekend all around the country, not just here in Dublin, of course. Events going on to mark that occasion. Okay, that's all we have time for in the GAA this week. Declan, thank you so much for coming in. You're going to stay with me anyway, I know, for the football section. Delighted to be joined on the line now by the one and only Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. Declan's in studio with me here as well, going through the football from all of this week. We'll start, of course, as always, with the games from last night, and Dundalk taking care of Bowes pretty handily, probably easier than most would have thought in their FAI Cup quarterfinal, 4-1.
Yeah, good morning, Declan, as well. I just was watching the match last night, obviously, Reggie, and as you rightly said, it probably disposed of them far easy as what we expected. I actually fancied Bowes going into the game because, obviously, there's been a lot of upheaval, which we've spoken about with Dundalk. They've been very inconsistent. They haven't hit the lofty standards that we've come to expect over the last 2 years. And to be fair to Bowes, they've been brilliant over the last 2 or 3 years and obviously finishing second. So I'm sure Keith Long is very... probably mystified this morning as to what went on, but they just didn't turn up. They conceded an early goal, which kind of rocked them, but they responded quite well from that and they got back in the game at 1-1. Then they gave away another soft penalty. Keith Buckley, an experienced player who's had a really good season, Keith, but gave away a penalty. Duffy getting taken down again, who played really well on the night. McMillan tucked it away. And they were probably a little bit unlucky with the third goal, Reggie, the fact that we could all see, obviously, from the camera and from the replay that it went over the line. It was probably hard for the referee to tell on the night, but once it went 3-1, it was an uphill task, and of course they had to send it off as well. So I'm sure Keith Long is very disappointed, because I'd say he looked at the cup as a real opportunity of not just winning the cup maybe, but just the fact to get to the final is also, there would have been a big opportunity here, because you look at what was waiting in the semi-final with Athlone, and you'd fancy them to win that. So last night was probably looking like a semi-final really. So I'm sure he's very, very disappointed. But to be fair to Dundalk, you have to give them credit. I know we've been critical of them this year, but that was probably the best they played. They were very good on the night, particularly Duffy and McMillan.
Yeah,
there was serious intent from them, wasn't there, Al? It was a quality performance all round from them.
Yeah, definitely, Declan. And the manager, to be fair, also, he spoke after the match about the fact that they had a week to prepare for this. Up to now, they've been playing games every 3-4 days. And you even see the managers in England giving out about the amount of games that they're having to play, and them all crammed in within the space of 3-4 days. So the fact that they did have the preparation time reflected well in that performance, and you could see that because they were full of energy, full of vigour, almost like the old Dundalk really, of what we've come to expect, Declan, but they were very, very good on the night.
Yeah, and in the other one then, Horgan was left going mad. I mean, you were talking about a game that we all felt that Rovers were just going to waltz through against Finn Harps. Suddenly they found themselves 2-0 down against the underdogs, looking very, very shaky, and they get 3 penalties in 5 minutes.
Yeah, crazy game, Reggie, and obviously with the crazy year that we're involved in, the pitch wasn't in great nick up in Ballybuffet. It was a wet night, which helped Finn Harps, you would have to say, but they went 2-0 up, and you're looking at it at 22 minutes thinking, are we going to have the biggest cup shock in a long time, because everybody fancied Finn Harps to go up, or sorry, Shamrock Rovers to go up to Finn Harps and win, but they showed real character, to be fair, coming back. Soft penalties, I would have to say, Reggie. You know, the fact that the handball one looked like a handball, but certainly you look at the one with Graham Burke, and I know Hegarty, the assistant manager, was very critical of Burke after the match, saying he had dived. It looked very, very soft from what I saw on the camera angle anyway. But they showed a lot of character, Shamrock Rovers, to come back, because 2-0 down at half-time up there with the pitch the way it was, it would have been easy just to roll over, but they didn't. They showed a lot of character to hang on to, obviously, the trophy that they're looking to defend, and they came out 3-2 winners on top.
Yeah, it's kind of nights like that that you really start thinking the double just might be yours, possibly, Al. All right. Can I just ask you very briefly about last week, your old club, Shelburne, dropping back down to the First Division again after only one season. The effects of that and the difficulty that they're going to face in their attempt to get back up with Galway, Cabinteely and Bray looking for the same thing next year?
Yeah, very, very disappointed, Declan, because I watched them with 2 games to go against Sligo Rovers the night they beat them, and it looked like they had secured their Premier Division status. And obviously, we all know what happened in the next 2 games, and whatever about what happened with Shelburne, more so with Finn Harps, because obviously they won 3 out of their last 4 and got themselves back into a position where coming into the the last day of the season, if they were to beat Waterford, they would stay up if Shelburne didn't beat Shamrock Rovers. And that's exactly what transpired. It's very, very disappointing because, as you well know, Dick, Shelburne has been in the doldrums for far too long. There was a lot of hype when they came back up to the Premier Division, which was great to see, and great to see the club back in some sort of working order and back where they should be, really, in the elite level of Irish football. And for them to be relegated, it's really, really disappointing. And as you say, the knock-on effect that may have with the First Division looking so competitive next year, I hope it's not a case of them finding themselves in that lower tier for another number of years.
Yeah, let's hope not. In the other quarter-final, Alan, your own former club, Sligo, they've got Derry on Wednesday night. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, Derry on Wednesday night, Declan. Both of them, I suppose Sligo Rovers got a major boost the last day of the season, beating Dundalk and finding themselves in a position now, if things go to plan in the Cup, they will be in Europe. And so far they are going to plan with, obviously, maybe a Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk winner, and they should find themselves in Europe. But they got a huge boost from that. So they'll be going into the game confident. Derry have been disappointing this year. But both clubs have really cup history and tradition. So it's hard to call, Reg, even though Sligo Rovers have the home advantage. Mm. It is hard to call, but I would favour a home win. But it will be a tough game. And obviously, the whoever comes out on top will play Shamrock Rovers, which would be a tough task in the next game.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, still one that they would certainly love, and a challenge they'd love to take on. Okay, during the week, I sat at home like everybody else, hoping to see things turn around for Stephen Kenny and Ireland get that badly needed win and the goal, if nothing else, against Bulgaria. But it just proved to be very disappointing again. But now he seems to be coming under attack from all angles. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you'd worry about these latest things that they're talking about in terms of, I think it sounds a bit stupid to me, a bit of a storm in a teacup, but, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly my feeling as well, Reggie. It's a storm in a teacup. But you look at the football side of things first, Wednesday night, it was probably the most disappointing performance under Stephen so far, but there was a lot of contributing factors, obviously, most notably the 14 absentees out of the original 26-man squad. And with the way the current layout is with the senior team, we can't afford to be losing three or four of our best players, never mind seven or eight of the other players on top of that as well, Reggie. So he's had his hands tied in that regard with COVID and injuries and suspensions and all that, but you still can't get away from the fact it was a very disappointing performance. And most importantly, the fact that had we won, we would have secured the Pot 2 status. It's going to make it even harder now. Obviously, we've dropped down to Pot 3. But you still have to row in behind Stephen and stick with him. That was the plan, and he's looking to change things. Change takes time, as we said, many's the time. So I'm still right behind Stephen. But this latest story with the video and obviously the preparation for the England game, it is just a storm in a teacup, Reggie. I'm sure you've been involved in dressing rooms where a manager is looking for any little edge he can get in terms of motivation. And I think, to be fair to Stephen, he's probably looking at the England game. He's a proud Irish man. He's probably trying to rev them up a little bit. He also probably looked at the quality that England have compared to the quality we have. And it's no contest, really, when it comes to that. And he's probably looking for any little extra edge he can get out of maybe getting a performance. I know sometimes when you delve into the political side of things, are you stepping on ground? But that's our history as well. You can't get away from that.
Listen, Alan, I've been involved in more games against England, and there's always been a motivational background of... it's not necessarily that the history or the political side of it. It's that we're old rivals. There's a rivalry that goes back for so many years, and that has to get your blood going. And in professional sport, as well as and even in amateur sport, that rivalry is what makes them what they are and makes them great. And I mean, this to me was an example of, you know, talking about your heritage, talk about your history so that people will understand what it actually means. Now, Andy Farrell will do that today in the sense that he will try and remind the Irish rugby team of the comments that were made by Eddie Jones, the fact that Rasmus came out and called them softies. All these things are tools that managers use. It's all about just trying to motivate your players and get them going. And to pick out Stephen Kenny on this and just try and make an example of him over and turn it political, to me, is just, you're really clutching at straws.
I agree totally, Reggie. Absolutely 100% behind you. And you look at Declan there with the GAA Dublin playing Meath today. You're telling me the managers won't be going back to old games and old rivalries that they've had, or Meath trying to get an edge on Dublin in some way. So it goes into every sport, every team, every manager does it, Reggie. I have no problem with it whatsoever. Yeah. It is absolutely... The bigger issue I would have on this is, what's been broken inside the camp is there's a trust, as you know, in a dressing room, and particularly in a camp. And if Stephen is showing videos or showing, having speeches or discussions, whatever is going on, for that to be leaked to an English newspaper in whatever way it was by a member of staff or a player, there's a trust being broken there. And that's a major issue for Stephen going forward, because whoever has broken that trust, I don't think there's room for him in the camp.
Yeah, it could be a disgruntled player. It could be somebody who feels they could should be getting a run.
Yeah, and the other thing on that, Reggie, as well, if that was the case and somebody did feel offended, and we know the era we live in now with people getting offended and stuff like that, and if there was somebody that felt aggrieved or felt it was unnecessary, why didn't they just pull Stephen aside and have a discussion with him and say, Stephen, look, I wasn't comfortable with that, or can you explain to me why you used this? Have it out with Stephen there and then, and it's all kept in-house. For it to be leaked to a newspaper, and now it's blown up into a, as you say, a storm in a teacup and pressed everywhere, and on top of the difficult job that Stephen has, I just think it's bang out of order.
There's two things I'd like to say in this. One is, I wonder, does Stephen have a mentor type figure, someone that he confides in, maybe, you know, because he's taken a big step up in job from Dundalk to the international management. That's one aspect of it. The other point is, of course, that a lot of these younger players now are so disconnected from 1988 and so on, you know. It doesn't mean that much to them. And maybe trying to use things like that on people like that doesn't have the same effect. And it'd be interesting, Reg, too, to hear how it was different with the rugby being a 32-county thing rather than just a 26.
Yeah, it's not even about the political end of it. I mean, we haven't got enough time to get into the real detail of it. But the fact of the matter is, it comes down to whether or not you feel your opposition respect you or not. And, you know, often that was the motivation the coaches would use with us. They just say to you, listen, guys, they just don't respect you. They don't think you're as good as them. They don't think you're fit to be on the same pitch as them. And that, to me, is enough motivation to get me going anyway, because you want to prove that point. And you might throw in a couple of other little bits alongside that, but it doesn't usually take a whole lot more than that for anybody to question your ability or your commitment to a certain thing. You know, that'll get your back up. What would you think, Al?
100%, Reg, yeah. And I think what you touched on as well a few minutes ago was the fact that he was probably showing what it means play for your country, and everybody, and it's the pinnacle in any player's life, as you said. You're playing against the most or nearest rivals, England. And I go back to the point, Reggie, the fact that sometimes these things don't work either. You could go back through many motivational videos and different things. Sometimes the work, if you get the result, everybody would say, "Oh, remember that video we watched that got us going." There's many times you could watch stuff or hear a speech beforehand. You go out and get beaten 2-3 nil, and this is what happened here. It was probably down to the fact that, as I said, the quality that England have. There's no contest. There's absolutely no contest from a football point of view right now at this moment in time when you look at our team compared to their team. So he's probably looking for edges any way he can get. And I know Stephen. I know him well. He's a very, very proud Irish man when it comes to stuff like that. And it means so much to him to be managing the Irish team. Yeah. And it might have been a thing where he was trying to even rev himself up. Whether he stepped over the line, I don't know, Reggie, but I just think, as you say, it is a storm in teacup, absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll move on from where we leave it there. Alan, as always, it's been great chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again next week. You mind yourself.
Pleasure, Reggie. Thanks. See you, Declan.
Take care.
That's Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call. They're on a break now, but they'll be coming back with that very, very popular and successful podcast of his as well. But as always, the show has flown through, and that's all we've got time for this week on the show. Thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. I want to thank our producers Blaine O'Hara and Paul Morris as well. We'll be back again next Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week. And come on, Ireland!